sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Welcome to 2009, the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So glad you're with me. This is Andrew Horowitz, and I'm going to spend some time today talking about some things that hopefully will get us to a real profitable experience in the next year, because we're leaving behind, well, a year we don't want to talk about too much. Kind of the one of those things we'll sweep under the carpet for the moment. We don't want to have to revisit that on a continual basis. So what I thought we'd do is, there's been a lot of talk about ETFs lately, and I thought what we'd do is start off, or actually have a discussion with someone who knows a good deal about that, Tom Lydon, who is president of Global Trends Investments, will be with us shortly. And we're going to talk about ETFs, so what's going on and how they could be used. Is it right for you? What's the difference between mutual funds? I'll ask him all sorts of things. We'll see if we can figure out if there's something beneficial there, because ETFs have really been taking the front stage in a positive manner, because they did a great job at helping hedge through some of the problems last year. And at the same time, some negative discussion about maybe they are causing some of the excess volatility in these markets right now. So we'll get to that in a minute. I thought what we'd do, though, is start quickly. I hope you had a wonderful, wonderful new year. You're well rested. You had the opportunity to. It was kind of cool this year, wasn't it? They had, you know, we had the Wednesday, Thursday thing, where Friday was kind of a, you know, a bit of an off day. Gave us a little bit of extra time to kind of relax. I didn't relax. I was busy writing and reading and doing all sorts of things. I did go on a little cruise. That was nice. What I did was also, what I did and I want to share with you was, you know, you come up this time of year with resolutions, right? You know, and I always find it funny that this time of year, when you drive by the fitness club, wherever you are, you ever notice that the parking lot is totally full, right? You know, this time of year, for the next 2 or 3 weeks, the parking lots are just overflowing with cars. But then 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, easier to get a spot, isn't it? Resolutions seem to be much different than promises and much different than commitments. Resolutions, from what I know, are, you know, ideas that, well, sound good and hopefully I'll do one day and I'm going to try my best to do, but it doesn't seem to work out. Nonetheless, what I did was I came up with a piece I wrote for MSN, and I called it the 2000 Resolutions for Profit. You know, some of the things that we wanted to do. And I said that simply, maybe we should just be very simple this year and say, you know, I resolved to profit from my investments in 2009. I came up with a few other things. You should, you know, go over the site and check it out, but forget the past. You know, probably All-Star All-Star Manager or Mangler Ken Huebner on the CGM Focus Fund, down about 50%. You know, kind of, you don't have to look at last year. We're looking at this year moving forward from now till then. Going backwards doesn't help us with anything, right? I also said that maybe I'm going to come up with a strategy that says that name recognition is no longer the only way to invest. You know, Research in Motion, Apple, General Electric. You know, there's a lot of different investments out there that maybe I never heard about. Again, I'm talking, you know, out loud about things, not really specifically about me or you, but just, you know, some food for thought, if you will, just to maybe give you some ideas and maybe you can put some things together for yourself. Never falling in love with an investment. Some, you know, just some core ideas that, you know, are beneficial. But what I thought was really cool, you can read all those on your own. What I thought was really cool is I asked my clients, I sent them a note, I said, do me a favor, send me out what you believe are, you know, some resolutions for yourselves. You know, what are you thinking about? What are the things you're going to do next year? And what do you really resolve to do differently? So they sent me back some things that were just great. And I picked out a bunch of these. I just want to read a few of these to you. These are directly from them. I didn't edit these at all. So it says, listen, one of them is, I will systematically place some of my savings in precious metals that are unlikely to evaporate due to executive fraud or mistakes. More true every day, it seems, the fraud and the mistake issue. Next one, I will always use stop loss orders, even if mentally, for mutual funds. If I forget, I will still even think the fall is almost over. Let's see, that doesn't sound right. If I forget, I will still, even though I think the fall is almost over. That's it. I won't get cocky when nailing a trade for a huge gain. Humility is just around the corner. We know that. I'll turn off CNBC, except for Squawk Box, which is mildly entertaining. I will always use a stop loss to cut losses. Kind of a theme here, it seems. Realize that there is no such thing as a defensive stock. All stocks are susceptible to getting killed. not funny. I'm just kind of like laughing in agreement, I guess. I resolved that when fear begins to take hold, I will not withdraw from information, but engage and read and think and act. Next, it says, in a bear market, being in cash is good. It is far better to be in cash than to wish you were in cash and to be 40% down or more. Next one is, I'm going to fire my buy and hold advisor. That is, I've heard that more times. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that lately. Next one is, I'll be more educated to involved in enabling my inner Ronald Reagan. I love that one. That is great. Next, cash is a legitimate position. I will attempt to catch no falling knives. And last one I picked up was, stop day trading at work, or at the very least, no more trading during a meeting. Jobs will be getting harder and harder to come by. And I think that that's a really good piece of information. I can't tell you how many times I've walked into an office and all I see is Yahoo Finance opened up on everybody's desk. You know what I'm talking about. And unfortunately, you know, we get sidetracked and our productivity goes down. And if there is the opportunity for a company to, you know, start thinking about maybe, you know, cutting back some of the employees. We saw the announcement of 17% reduction by Microsoft coming up. Huge number on top of Citi and all the other groups that have decided to cut back. So none of us are indispensable, it seems, these days. But the other thing that I wanted to mention to you before we get into this discussion, you know, one of the things that's really been troubling me lately is I keep on wondering what's bothering me with mainstream media. I mean, what is it that's just doesn't seem right? You know what I think you know what I'm saying. Is this something I can't put my finger on? But then today I think I realized what it is. It seems that everybody is trying to just constantly push their opinion for whatever reason, push their opinion on me. I mean, it's like I have to listen and be convinced about whether the stock market's going up, whether it's going down, whether Asia's the only place to invest, whether the dollar's going to crater, whether oil's going up. But I mean, it's just like this constant barrage of someone trying to sell me something or tell me what, you know, that their opinion's the only way. You know, you watch the TV and the talking heads go, you know, banter back and forth on why this stock is good or why that stock is. I mean, it seems that, you know, the information these days is more wrapped up in not only opinion, but in a the nonsensical stance of constantly trying to convince and win over the argument. Do you notice that? Because I find that it's repulsive, frankly. I hope that this year's a little bit different. Maybe we could stop with that. It's probably not going to be. I'm fooling myself. But I'm so tired of trying to weed through the information, find out what bias someone has, why they're, you know, what are they, why are they saying what they're saying? You know, what is it that they're trying to, you know, put in underneath all of that? And really, unfortunately, in the end, I think we're all losers because listening to that, in terms of listening to this stuff and agreeing to it, you know, there's always an edge somewhere, it seems. And we knew that going way back. We talked about, you know, never using what we call sell-side analysis, which is, you know, utilizing reports from the companies that are selling the stocks because obviously they're going to try to pump the stocks. And analysts have always been extremely, let's say that they've been aggressively looking to find ways to make something look a lot better than it really is. That's just, I think a resolution that I'm going to do is also, as somebody mentioned here, is, you know, really take things more with, even more than I have in the past, take things more with a grain of salt, because it appears to me that there really was no expert anywhere that had the real clue here. And even though you see these days, oh, the 10 top that call the markets, I mean, I could tell you stories about some of them, how their clients, you know, lost 50 and 60% last year. They may have called one market, but they lost in the other. And on top of that, what's really even more disturbing is the fact that, you know, the media loves lists. You put a number in front of it, you know, the 5 top stocks, or, you know, take a look at the Motley Fool, how they write things. You know, the only stocks you have to have before you die. And if you don't get these stocks today, you know, you're just going to, live out your life in poverty. I mean, those are the kind of titles we're dealing with these days because they know the media that that's the only way you're going to read something. You know, we move so quickly through things. So, I don't know. But that, I just think that it's wise for us this year to kind of make our own ideas up, because I think that probably many of us, many of you have had some really good ideas that you wish you would have done, but you listen to a lot of people that kind of got you wrong, going in the wrong place. And I hope that, you know, what I can do next year in 2009 is bring you good information and do my best, at least, to bring it in a way that you can, understand that hopefully there's no edge. You know, that's my goal, at least. You know, and hopefully there's no bias here, but you know, clean information that will, you know, get you where you need to be. All right, so there's that. The last thing is, I'll mention that the other thing you want to possibly read is the 10 Dogs of the Dow for 2009. Kind of a cool thing. It's kind of interesting to see who's in there. Citigroup, Bank of America, Merck, Verizon, AT&T, GE, JP Morgan. But I gave a lesson on how to use the MSN Money screener, the stock screener. And you can go to my site that's on there, the 10 Dogs of the Dow for 2009. An interesting list. I'm not suggesting you really invest in those, but the story is interesting in terms of going contrarian style and investing there. And I just thought that understanding how to use the MSN Money Stock Screener, great place to use your quantitative. You know, that's the second part of second chapter of my book, The Disciplined Investor, but also the thing that I use is the Quanta Funda Tecna, right? The Quanta is a quantitative analysis. That's exactly what that is. Is going unemotionally and finding positions and making a list for yourself of positions to utilize, you know, not to say, oh, I really like that store, so I'm going to buy that stock. No, it's being unemotional, unattached, not falling in love, and finding stocks that make sense utilizing quantitative screens. So with that in mind, we're going to be right back with Tom Lydon, president of Global Trends Investments, all about ETFs. You're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Happy New Year.
Hi, this is Grammar Girl from quickanddirtytips.com, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
We're here with Tom Lydon. He's president of Global Trends Investments. He's also he's got a pretty good resume here. He's on the board of RIDEX Funds. He's served on the board of directors of U.S. Global and Pacific PIMCO, actually, and RIA, and wrote a book, and we'll get you all that information. But he is a specialist, really knows stuff about ETFs. He runs a site called ETFtrends.com. And globaltrend.com. But I thought that with all of the discussion these days about what's happening in the world of ETFs, particularly the inverse and double inverse, and, you know, now we have these triples, who knows, maybe one day we'll have, you know, what would they be called? Let's call it, you know, Okta, eight-time funds or something, one of these days. So, Tom, tell me something. What is going on in the world of ETFs? They've gotten very popular, haven't they?
Well, they have. I mean, if you look at last year, the flow of money going into ETFs was actually net positive, when the money coming out of mutual funds was in the range of $400 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So during a time when the market was challenged, ETFs, number one, held up very well, and number two, they did exactly what they're supposed to do. Now, again, with the amount of money that's in there, it's still only about 6% of the total money in mutual funds right now. But as more investors are losing trust with the markets, they're losing trust with mutual funds, with 8 or 9 out of 10 actively managed mutual funds underperforming their benchmarks and the fees that go along with them, most individual investors are saying, hey, if I can't beat the market, why not buy the market? And I can do that in the form of ETFs. So I think as we look forward, we're going to see, of these trillions of dollars of cash that's on the sidelines, that ETFs will get more than their fair share of money as it comes back into the market.
So let me kind of go a different angle and come back for a second. So there was a time that I really liked mutual funds, conceptually, again, from the idea that, hey, you know what, we get diversification, we have good management, reasonable fees, you know, particularly if you go indexing you know, somebody else, another layer of management watching over it. And then I got to tell you something. One day I woke up and said, you know, look at these ETFs. They're basically mutual funds, low cost, pretty good tracking, index funds, that is. And on top of it, I have the ability to move in and out of them on an intraday basis. So what I said to myself, what am I missing? And realized that there isn't anything I'm missing. And that set up my thesis that the mutual fund industry is going to die a horrible death if they don't do something dramatic, because the money, as you just said, the money that they're losing is enormous. So what can save the mutual fund industry?
Well, I don't think the mutual fund industry is going to go away. With ETFs, yes, there's not a lot of sales that you see. I mean, some of the marketing is out there, but because of the nature of the low expenses, they're not people selling ETFs. There's very little marketing behind them. But there's this underground, almost evolution that's occurring among advisors, hedge funds, mutual funds themselves that are using ETFs, and most importantly, individual investors that are saying exactly what you're saying. I used to like mutual funds, but they're not holding up as well as the market. I don't trust them as much anymore. I like the liquidity, and I know with an ETF, I know what the underlying stocks are. So it makes sense. However, they do trade, as you say, like stocks. It's a little bit of a different aspect to trading, not only for individuals but also for investment advisors. But the bottom line is they work. So I think, as you say, going forward, we're going to continue to see more money going into ETFs. But until ETFs make it into 401k plans, we're not going to see them make a huge dent in the overall assets.
Yeah, but this is going to be a dramatic change going on here. I mean, 401ks were obliterated because two things. Number one, everyone was told, particularly in 401ks now, they were told it's time in and not timing of the market. You know all the lines, right? It's time in,
right?
And not timing. For every 20 years that you look at the markets, there's never been a down market cycle. Blah, 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 you know, all this crap. And those are all true. No question about that, right? I have no problem with that. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at the mutual funds, the only thing that could have happened in a 401k is that the participant will make money if the market goes up. They cannot make money if the market goes down. And they will, in fact, lose money if the market goes down. Now, obviously, that's duh. I mean, obviously, we know that, right? But the problem is that they don't have any choices. I mean, they're not given any choices. And that's a terrible thing.
Well, they do have a choice to reallocate, and they do have a choice to go to cash. But you know, and I know, that the average 401k investor just won't do that.
Right.
They don't necessarily have a plan, or they don't necessarily have a discipline. One plan that we use is following a 200-day average. Be 100% in the S&P 500 when you go above the 200-day, sell when you go below the 200-day, and go to cash. If you followed that, you avoided the major decline this year and also 2000 to 2002.
Can I throw a monkey wrench into that?
Sure.
You know, I think that was a good idea. Really, just follow me. Just tell me where my theory is wrong on this, because I've seen this before. But I think the problem is that when you have such a dramatic parabolic move like we've seen on the downside recently, your 200-day gets a little bit wonky. So in other words, your 200-day doesn't catch up fast enough. So that,
right.
You follow what I'm saying? So you may catch it clearly on the down. You may definitely, when the markets move down, you may catch the, you'll get out of the market, right? But
right.
On the way up, you're like, uh-oh, it's never going to get there. You know what I'm saying? By the time you get there, it's like 25% of an opportunity lost. So,
well, Andrew, you're one step ahead of me. And the last time we were this far below the 200-day average on the major indexes was back in the early 70s.
Mm.
So what we're doing in following the strategy for our managed clients is when we go above the 50-day average,
mm-hmm.
which has just happened,
right.
You put in 25%, and
right.
You wait for that to increase by 5%, and then you put in another 25%. And if that goes up by 5%, guess what? You're back in line with the 200-day average. But you're right. It was so out of whack, things had declined so much that it did help you on the sell side, but we would have had to see a 25% move to the upside in order to get back in.
Well, you know what's great about that? I'll be honest, because I just wrote about this too, that so many people and so many advisors too are so absolute with their theories and their designed strategies because it's worked in the past. Oftentimes, you know, it's always worked in the past. That's the thing you always hear. And
mm-hmm.
and what people forget, all people, me too, I'm including myself there, that, you know, sometimes things aren't the same. You know, it doesn't always have to be the same. And, you know, by you changing your strategy and being flexible, it gives you a better opportunity. Now, whether it works or not, we'll see in the long run, right? But the fact is that, you know, where someone doesn't change when they stay value only, growth only, we saw the debacles back in the early mid to late 90s and then 2000 with value versus growth, right? Large cap, small
right.
cap. I mean, you got to be flexible in the markets in general. Maybe for the, I don't know, let's say 60% of the time, stay with what you know, what you do, and how, you know, what you believe is the right thing. But every once in a while, you got to get a little flexible in there. And that's kind of what was missing with the 401k plans, because they didn't, they really had no flexibility because they were only buying and holding, and they were always told to hold. And then what happened was when it got low, they were so afraid to sell because they would think, wait a minute, if I sell now, I'll never make it back up, right?
Right. Right.
So do you think that ETFs will get in there eventually?
Well, I do. I think eventually there's going to be more pressure. I mean, right now as we speak, Congress, as of January 1st, has a new mandate for more fee disclosure, more performance disclosure in 401k plans, which is great. We're also seeing a grassroots effort from individual investors who are going into a human resources department and saying, hey, look, I have 12 mutual funds. 8 out of the 12 are underperforming their benchmarks. Why don't we have ETFs? But Fidelity, for example, gets 2/3 of every new dollar coming into their fund complex via 401k plans. They're not motivated anytime soon to create ETFs within 401k plans and shoot themselves in the foot as far as the fees that they're collecting right now. But I think enough pressure and enough time goes by as we continue to monitor the difference in overall performance of ETFs versus corresponding mutual funds, we'll see more demand for ETFs and hopefully at one point more demand for ETFs in 401ks. There are some smaller companies that are offering it, but you're not going to see General Electric offer ETFs in a 401k plan anytime soon.
Well, here's also, not to beat this dead horse, because this is a great area I want to cover. We can get back to ETFs in a second. But in mutual funds, I just got notification, and we just posted this on the MSN Top Stocks blog, that American Funds, fund family that I really admire, or you know, had admired over the time, and admire their style and strategy, forget the returns for a moment, they just put an announcement out on December 31st that they're increasing their fees. The waiver that they had for many of their mutual funds, they're removing and increasing the fees on the funds to the client. Have you seen that?
I heard about it.
That's ugly.
It is. It is. And you know, part of that is because you know, they had certain assets at the beginning of 08, and now with the not only depreciation, the money that's flown out, they as a company are having less money come to the bottom line. Knowing a little bit about how fund companies are structured, many have that option to be able to increase fees, and it's not right to give that extra whammy to the individual investor after they've just been punished in the market, especially those that have stuck with you through this period of time.
And by the way, may I say that they could have done this differently. If they would have done their job and saved the assets for the client, however that would happen, however that plays out, okay, they wouldn't have had to raise their fees in the first place or in the second place around the back end. But what this really, what troubles me about this so much is this the heads I win, tails you lose concept. You know, I agree that American Funds, you know, lost a tremendous amount of money. But you know what? Again, it was somewhat in their control, somewhat. You know, they could have done things to it to save their money, whether it was get out or short or whatever they were going to do. But at the same time, you know, it's always back down to the individual guy who just gets the real screwing in the end of the day because of the fine print. I mean, this thing was done on December 31st. Yeah, you can get out a little bit afterwards. It's not going to hurt you too badly. But we're talking about American Funds gets to maybe recapture, I don't know, 20% higher fees now, even though it seems insignificant on an individual basis. And I think that's a trend that we'll probably see in a lot of fund families. And I'm very concerned about the industry itself. And I think we're going to see a lot of consolidations down the road. I think that's going to be happening, though.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, one thing that not many of us noticed is in March of 2008 was a five-year number from the low of the market in March of 2003. And a lot of mutual fund companies went out and jumped up and down about their great five-year numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And they used those advertising dollars to entice investors to add more money or to stick with what had already been in place.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, when markets get toppy, they don't spend that same money to go out and educate investors to say, hey, we've got some economic challenges here. There may be earnings issues. You may want to lighten up, especially those that are closer to retirement or in retirement. You're never going to hear that from a fund company.
You know what they did, though? I'll just tell you the second thing. We'll get right. Then we're going to go right to the ETFs, but I really don't want to beat this to death. But they sent an email out or a letter out to their advisors showing them how to restore confidence in because they, you know, to get more sales. I just got this. I said, why am I getting this? But basically they sent out a piece, which tells me they're really hurting, obviously. But they sent out a piece and they said, we need to restore confidence, and not for the, it didn't seem at all like it was being altruistic and helping people through this process, but it was more so geared to just get sales. And it was a three-step process that was so lame, I can't even begin to tell you. And it really just goes to the heart of, I think, you know, that the mutual fund process has become a beast of just asset gathering. And I know you're involved with some of these companies, so I apologize about, you know, any kind of, you know, bashing that I'm doing here with this. But, you know, and I was a big fan for a while too. So, I mean, you know, I don't know if it's like a reformed smoker here or something, you know, but The problem is that they can't move. I mean, truly, the mutual funds couldn't make any changes to their portfolios, could they have? They really were stuck with what they had.
No, they can't. They can't. They have to stick with the mandate of their funds. And, you know, again, fortunately, the fund companies I'm involved in are pretty clear about what their mandates are. And if they have aggressive funds that they're offering, they come right out and say, for an individual investor, you may only want to consider X amount in this portion in your portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel pretty proud to be involved with those companies and what they've been able to do. The bigger companies, as we go forward, are going to continue to have challenges because, as you say, here we've gone 10 years, and we're lower than we were 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a lost decade, and these people who've been retired for this period of time have less money than they did 10 years ago,
right.
And they're not going to continue to trust going forward. So many are going to have to take actions into their own hands, and I think what the whole thing about we're talking about here is ETFs may become more and more of a tool for those types of investors.
So let's get to that discussion. Everybody, you know, there's a lot of people using all sorts of ETFs, whatever the names may be. The lists are quite amazing when you look at what's out there, right? Let's talk about some of the things that have gone on recently. The double inverse, well, let me step back for a second. There was a recent Wall Street Journal article that talked about how ETFs could be potentially, we'll say it, to blame, or the reason why, better said, that the end of the day movement of the markets has been so extreme. Before I die, I want someone to explain to me with absolute, you know, understanding what is going on between 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Because I don't really understand. Can you tell me? Because I would really, I'll send you everything that I have and my children and everything.
No, I don't think anybody really understands, although it's surely gotten attention. And let me just say, and from a big picture standpoint, since ETFs have gotten so much attention lately and so much popularity, people are looking for the chink in the armor. There's got to be something wrong with these things. And to date, there really haven't been any issues. I mean, one thing that happened in 2008 was there was a huge amount of money, billions of dollars, that were flowing into commodity-related ETFs. Did commodity-related ETFs have anything to do with the huge appreciation in agricultural pricing, hard assets, energy? They may. And it probably was not a supply and demand issue in all those asset classes. It may have been just a lot of money chasing other good money that was going in there. And we know for sure that a lot of people got caught holding the bag. So, but if you look at it, ETFs did exactly what they were supposed to do. They were just the tool that were used during that period.
Right, whether they bought the index or the ETF or the stock itself or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It does what it does.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So we have to understand, you know, ETFs are a tool. Are they used the right way? Do people understand them? And in the end, are there any surprises? I got to say, with most ETFs, there aren't a lot of surprises. There have been some inefficiencies that have happened that you can kind of pick out. There was one trading period in February of 2007 when Asian markets were closed and we had big declines in our markets and the pricing was off by, you know, 8 to 10%. But, you know, instances like that are really far and few between
mm-hmm.
when you look at ETFs in general. Again, getting to the short and inverse short and leveraged long ETFs, they've been quite popular. As you look at the past year and a half, not only from what RIDEX started years ago and what ProShares followed with in mutual funds, and then ProShares has kind of led in the ETF side, we've seen a lot of money that's been flowing into these short and inverse ETFs, and people and advisors like yourself have been able to help protect client portfolios.
But so am I to assume that you're going to leave me hanging on the 3 to 4 o'clock thing?
Well, here's the thing. Bottom line is, I think there are a lot of investors that feel that there's some big things that happened in the last hour, and if they see a certain trend that's occurring, whether it's to the upside or the downside, and they want to participate quickly, ETFs are the way to go, especially with the inverse and leverage ETFs, and you know, inverse on leverage on the long side. So I'm not sure if there's more and more money, especially during these volatile times, that they're trying to enter in and grab a couple percentage points. That's probably the case, and it may be that ETFs are the tools that are being used. Again, talking to some of the exchanges, they'll say yes, because now ETFs make up more than 45% of the activity on the exchanges these days.
It's amazing. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Now, how about this? Do you remember a few years back? This totally, I'm taking credit for this. You have nothing to do with what I'm about to say, okay? I free you from this. But do you remember a few years back that the mutual fund companies had this weird thing going on with the international arbitrage deal where they would do some very late day trading? I don't mean after hours yet. I mean, you know, up till 4 o'clock. They got some kind of weird, you know, indication that the Asian or European markets were going to, you know, open up this way or whatever. So they'd buy a mutual fund and there was some kind of, they would be clipping a 0.5% here, 0.25% there. Remember that whole thing? And then it got bad because they did it after the hours. They got really greedy. You know, they got stupid.
Right.
And then they got, you know, then they killed the golden goose, of course, which is the only natural progression of all of this. I wonder if just by some, I don't know, you know, we won't, let's say, you know, a big brokerage, a major brokerage firm has caught on to the fact that ETFs need to have a portfolio built on, you know, the buying and selling, who's buying and selling, whatever valuations of the stock. And, you know, they found a arbitrage situation where they can, you know, because ETFs have to buy and have to clean up and square off their portfolios by the end of the day, right? So I wonder if there's some kind of discussion there that maybe one of these brokerage firms, who I wouldn't put past them with what I've seen them do recently, have found some kind of an aberration in the way these are handled, and they can kind of hold off for a period, and I don't want to say front run, but we'll say something, where they figured out how to do this and make some money from it. Again, I'm not holding you to that. I'm saying this.
Well, there are, you know, I know for a fact there are a huge amount of companies on Wall Street that are making money arbitraging ETFs.
Yep,
they're
same.
Looking at the underlying holdings.
Yep.
They're looking at bid and the ask, and they're looking at intrinsic value. And if anything's off and they can make a, you know, percentage of a point here and there, they'll go in and do it. And they've built their businesses on it. So, again, what there's more and more pressure for the market makers to do a good job. And I'll tell you, these ETF providers are looking very, very closely at this. They prefer that there wasn't an arbitrage opportunity around, but it is from time to time. And I think what it does to a great degree, it keeps the industry honest.
It keeps the industry honest, but you know what? This is not an honest industry anymore. And, you know, let's be honest about that. And you know, what I saw went on with oil in the summer and a few of the other little ditties that went around has really, you know, made me open my eyes to the fact that, and let's just bring up Bernie Madoff, why don't we? you know, I mean, that the industry, you know, Harvey Pitt even says that the industry is just incapable of doing a good job, not because they're stupid, they just can't.
Well, you're just driving home the point more and more that individuals need to know exactly what they own in their portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not an individual stock and knowing about the individual stock, if they own an index, what are the underlying holdings of that index? And again, with ETFs, there aren't any secrets. You know exactly what you own.
So, Tom, let me ask you. So let's set the stage for a minute. You're a client of mine, okay?
And
you're a client of mine for a long time, and everything's, you know, hunky-dory, everything's good. And you say to me, hey, Andrew, you know, I don't know why. I'm curious. What do I have in my portfolio? You know, what do I got? I always wondered. And I say to you, hang on, I'll get you a statement. And I send you a statement, and you look, and you said, this is great. And I said, well, you know, I just want to clarify, that's 3 months old. And you say to me, what do you mean? I said, well, I don't have to really provide you anything but 3 months ago what's in the portfolio. And you say, oh, and that's not good, right? That doesn't make any sense to you, does it?
No. In this day and age, that's not acceptable.
But a mutual fund does that.
A mutual fund does that, correct.
That's kind of rough.
It's not acceptable. You know, I don't know about with your clients, but my clients, we custody at Schwab. We give all of our clients online access so they can look at their account every day. We discourage them not to.
Right.
And then anytime there's a transaction, they get an email directly from Schwab that says that we've had a buy or a sell in their account, and they can click right through and know exactly what we bought or sold. And today, I think that's what clients expect.
Yeah, and that's what's shocking about the mutual fund business, that they're so archaic. I mean, I understand that they don't want us, you know, they don't want to give away the recipe, which we know the recipe. They buy a block of stocks, they hold it forever. Fine, we know the recipe. Just, you know, you don't want to tell us what stocks? We know what stocks you're buying. You're buying the big ones. We know.
Well, this is making the case more and more strong for actively managed ETFs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were introduced this past year. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see more and more of them. There are some great funds out there. There's some great fund managers. There's some great brands. And if they can take their management discipline and put it an ETF around it, they should do very, very well. But the bottom line is they're going to have transparency. Mm-hmm. And if they're concerned about somebody else copying their buy and sells, then they shouldn't enter the game.
Right.
I don't think people are going to do it, but I think as we move forward, we're going to see that many more companies throw their hat in the ring and enter the ETF world with actively managed ETFs.
You know, I think there's a very important distinction, a distance that you have to have. Transparency is important. I have no question about that. I mean, as a matter of fact, I get emails from my clients. We have we set up a private blog for all of our Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy clients, which is a very actively traded portfolio. So we set up this private blog where we have whether it's economic reviews or information about what we're buying and selling, why we're doing it, and we have discussions with all of them. You know, they love it. You know, we talk about exactly what we're doing, what we're buying it at, where we're looking to put a stop in at if we're selling something, why we're buying the position. Here's a chart. Look at the chart. Why we're doing this, we're doing that. You know, what's the rationale behind this? Or just a discussion about, okay, the markets are doing this. This is what we believe is happening. Very, very open, very direct and right there. Just they love it. They love it. They're, you know, we get a lot of conversation back and forth. But what's interesting is that, you know, you talk about transparency, and I think there's a little bit, you know, we need transparency, but we don't need to have so much transparency that people are just overloaded with information that they don't know how to really deal with, you know?
Right. I agree. I think people just want to know, if they want to know the information, they know it's current, they want to know where to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, no surprises.
Right.
Same thing with the fact that clients can look at their portfolio online every day and see exactly where they stand.
Right.
You know, when they get that option, they do it a couple times, and then they go away and don't look at it again because they trust you or they trust me to manage their money for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't feel like they need to get in there every week and see what's going on.
Right. So now let's just skip over to this other issue, and then maybe you could help me on how you would just very generically how a portfolio could be set up these days. But very, very quickly, this double inverse situation that's getting a lot of attention right now is that the double inverse, which is the negatively correlated, let's just say the S&P 500 index, they did very well when the let me step back. Before October, when I charted the differential between the double leveraged bullish, if you will, and the double leveraged bearish, they tracked very well. In other words, they were, you know, about two times differential from the S&P 500. But then, mm-hmm, all of a sudden in October, a little bit past October, maybe towards November, I guess, things got getting a little weird. And, you know, was it really that, and what happened from there was that they were no longer, especially the double inverse, was no longer tracking at all like it should. As a matter of fact, it was very tracking terribly. And was it a lot to do with the fact that the VIX, the volatility levers, were so out of whack, and when they were buying many of the swaps and maybe the options or whatever else was in the portfolio, mm-hmm, that they bought them at such ridiculous prices because the makeup of the pricing of what they had was part of volatility, that when the volatility came down, it just like extracted a portion of the value?
Well, I think that has something to do with it. I think volatility was a huge part of it as well. But also understanding that usually the way these work, on a given day, if the S&P, let's say, is down 1%, the double inverse ETF usually is up on that given day 2%.
Mm-hmm.
On a day-to-day basis, the way you look at it, that usually is how it works. However, as you have interday or collective days of performance, and we had so much volatility, one day it would be up 3%, one day the market would be down 4%. That, from a compounding standpoint, really knocked, I think, the overall correlation out of whack the way you had been accustomed to watching it as comparing to the benchmarks. So we went through a period of time there of about, 6 to 8 weeks, where we had a huge amount of volatility, not only intraday, but also from a day-to-day basis, where, it wasn't strange to see the market move 5 to 7% on a given day, mm-hmm. and then make it back the next day, and for the week end up flat.
Mm-hmm.
But by the structure of these ETFs and the derivatives and the swaps underlying, from a compounding standpoint, sometimes it would work against you. Sometimes it would work for you, but sometimes it works against you. The bottom line is, if you are an investor and you're using the short and leveraged ETFs and you took money off the table from an equity standpoint and you bought these things, in some cases it didn't do exactly what you wanted them to do, but in many cases it helped your portfolio out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the big thing that we're trying to get come away with here. Here's an opportunity for an individual investor who, number one, you can sell and go to cash, but number two, if you feel that there's going to be more downside risk, you can hedge your portfolio a bit rather than going to, and buying puts or buying options, which for the average investor, it's pretty difficult.
Yeah, no, I agree. So you wrote this book called iMoney, Profitable Exchange-Traded Fund Strategies for Every Investor. So you have a lot of every investors listening right now. If you could think about what is the way that investors can, really work with their portfolios and build a good core ETF portfolio, whether it's trading or not. But I'm saying, what does that look like? I mean, we're dealing with a lot of foreign, obviously it depends on the time. I know that. I'm not trying to box you
right.
in here. But, give me a
right.
general idea of that.
Well, for every investor, number one, we start out with a great ETF 101. We're talking about ETFs here. More and more people are hearing about ETFs. But the fact is, very few, from a percentage standpoint, have actually begun using ETFs in your portfolio. So if you're thinking about it, it's a great book to follow. As you get more into it, though, we've talked about short and inverse. We've talked about commodities, their currency, their other single country funds, their sectors. And in all of these asset classes, they're now ETFs that represent these areas. So we talk about that in the book. And then finally, more importantly, as we are in these volatile markets, there's one chapter that's really dedicated to trading ETFs, using moving averages, specifically how you track them, having a discipline that's non-emotional. And I think as we go forward for investors, in order to be successful, they're going to have to do some type of trend following and have some exit strategies in place so they don't go through what they've gone through in the last 10 years.
Yeah, now that was... That's been rough, and it doesn't matter if you held on to an ETF, a mutual fund, a stock, a bond. I mean, it didn't matter. It was all just bad. So what other ETF sites do you like? Where can people? I think John Markham was on, 2 weeks ago, and he talked about a couple different ones that he liked to track ETFs and find that information. So aside from the company sites themselves, right? Are there any other places that you really like that are just like really have some good stuff to real goodies on the site?
Well, Morningstar does a decent job, although I'm still not convinced that they're completely dedicated to ETFs because they've covered funds for so long.
Did you say because they're advertisers or mostly mutual funds? Is that what you just said? I'm sorry. Is that what you said?
They've got some ETF advertisers as well. and they're doing a good job, and they're putting more uh-huh. Into the coverage, so that's good. Index Universe is a great site.
Mm-hmm.
They do an excellent job. There are a few other sites, ETF Guide, ETF Screen, ETF Expert, and at ETF Trends, our site, what we do is we're always out there looking for stories relating to ETFs and ETF marketplaces, and we'll actually borrow their stories as they write about it. We'll give them full credit. We'll link back to them, but many investors and advisors look at ETF Trends as a place to go where if you want to know what's going on in the ETF industry, you want to look for new trends in the marketplace, you want to look for new ETFs that are available, you want to track ETFs on a daily basis. We're an aggregator of news and research information. We're writing 8 stories a day, and we're continuing. We doubled in traffic last year during a period of time when the market was cratering. So it just tells you that more and more people are looking and clamoring for information regarding ETFs.
Well, I think that's good because so many people will say that, I mean, all of us got, you know, everybody got complacent between the 2003